Welcome to Tom Papa's Come to Papa. Hello, everybody. Welcome to another edition of Come to Papa. We are in New York City. That's right. Paul and I in New York City. Very exciting.
Yeah, I can see Broadway from your window.
Yes. You can see the Freedom Tower.
Yes.
We are downtown at the Soho Grand Hotel, and we are looking out at an overcast sky up at the Freedom Tower. How about that other building right next to it, the Jenga building?
Yeah, that's crazy.
Isn't that cool? It looks like Jenga. I posted a picture of it. It literally looks like some people have started playing Jenga with the building. The bottom is totally solid, and the top is all, like, the blocks have been pushed to the left, right, back, and center. It looks really cool.
Yeah, it's almost like they're tempting the terrorist. Like, come try to knock this one down.
My biggest problem with... this is not a problem, but my biggest problem with this view is I love it so much, and I want to keep the windows open when I sleep, but it's too bright. You just can't sleep with that much light in your face. I can't. So I end up having to shut down this beautiful view every time I go to sleep, which is such a shame.
And you do have this... you're high enough where the noise isn't too much, but you're in the middle of like three different major roads.
My favorite, the reason I like this, you might say, Tom, good choice facing south with the Freedom Tower. Good choice facing the Jenga building. No. The real trick of this room is you get to look straight down at the Holland Tunnel traffic. All those roads are squeaking into the Holland Tunnel. And if you've ever been in Holland Tunnel traffic, you know how heinous it is.
Yeah.
So to sit here and listen to the horns and watch everybody struggle is such a treat. When you're not in it, it is such a fun thing to watch. And then to watch it at like 10 o'clock at night, and there's nobody, and you just see this one guy buzz through where people were just tearing them, having heart attacks. And that guy just goes right over to New Jersey.
Well, you also have these rich people... Like, this is the Maserati building.
Mm-hmm.
So they have all these plants and trees and stuff, which only a really rich person would be like, I've got a $10 million condo. We need plants up here.
Yeah. Well, no, I know. I mean, the amount of money that people spend on these places. I mean, if you look across there, someone over there has a TV that is bigger than the side of my house. It's really sick. So we're here tonight because we're filming, shooting, taping the next Live Come to Papa, which we will air later on, maybe Thursday, probably next Tuesday. I don't know when we're going to do it. But we're shooting it tonight with some really great acts. It's going to be really funny. I finally finished the script.
Okay.
I've been here several days because I worked with Jerry Seinfeld, the great Jerry Seinfeld, at the Beacon last Thursday.
Yeah, how was that?
It was great. It was really fun. Good shows. Good to see Jerry, of course. And had a swell time. And finished that up, and then I've got to work at the Comedy Cellar for the weekend, which was so great. Literally have not done that. I cannot tell you the last time. It's got to be over a year.
Yeah, a full weekend there? Yeah,
just hanging out like the old days.
That's cool.
Banging out four or five sets a night. And, you know, because I'm going to do Conan on June 14th, so...
Oh, nice.
I was able to work on my set. It's just so much fun. I mean, just the Comedy Cellar... Between the Comedy Underground, the Lounge, and the Fat Black Pussycat, and the Comedy Cellar itself, 9 shows a night.
Yeah, crazy.
9
How
shows
do you feel now, though? Are you
a night.
Do you feel like the veteran guy? Like, remember when it was the table with Colin Quinn and DePaulo and all those guys?
Yeah,
and now you're that guy.
It's definitely shifted for sure. I mean, there was one night when I was there and I didn't really... I kind of know these guys, but not really.
Yeah.
And then one night, it was like, you know, Robert Kelly was there, and Jim Norton was there, and some of my crew was around. You know, and I'm really friendly with the new guys too, but there's definitely like those guys are there through the winter every night, you know, like we used to be. Like some of the guys that are on the show tonight at on the Come to Papa Live, Sam Morrell and Mark Norman,
right?
Those guys, and Ryan Hamilton, Gary Goldman. So there's always like, you know, there's always crossover guys, but yeah, it's definitely another generation for sure, for sure. Yeah, but the cool thing about the Comedy Cellar, you know, it'd be tough for me to come back and just do that constantly, but you know. Chris Rock was there the other night. He's coming through and doing his thing. Mm-hmm. When Louis was getting close to Saturday Night Live, he was going through every night and doing his thing. And it's still like, it's kind of like the gym. It's like the boxer's gym.
Yeah.
And, you know, once in a while, the champ comes back. he's got to get in shape for whatever thing he's doing. And the young guys are scrapping and trying to get their shot at the title. And it's great. It really is cool.
Yeah, that's the whole thing that's weird about it is like, especially in New York, you work to pass at these clubs, and then everyone wants to work these clubs every night because they're worried that they're going to stop getting the spots.
Yeah.
When in essence, like, you should be almost doing that shift. Like, how much better would you be if you, like, you just came there, like, every 4 months and worked there for, like, a week or something?
For me, sure.
Yeah.
But, you know, I've been doing it for 23 years. So, like, I know what I'm doing and, you know, and I'm out doing other spots and doing longer things on the weekends, and then you come in there and you can go to work, you know, like you're saying. But when you're coming up, there's nothing more valuable. I mean, it's all about time. Mm-hmm. You just need time on stage, time on stage, time on stage. You have to go there every single night. And when you're starting out, just doing the Cellar that night is not enough. You've got to go run up to the stand or run up to the New York Comedy Club or wherever else they like to go. You can't beat it. That's why as a young comic, like to go to LA is just like a mistake.
Right.
If you want to be a pure comedian, mm-hmm. you know, if you want to go do other stuff, that's fine. But I mean, you cannot beat the repetition of stuff. I mean, literally, you know, for me, I went in with the set and it was kind of wobbly and now it's totally rock solid, you know, within 2 or 3 days and I'm ready to go. But, you know, if you're building an act and building it up and you've only been doing it 8-9 years, you know, you should be there every single night.
Yeah, yeah.
You shouldn't take a breath.
Well, I didn't mean it like that. I meant like it's the point basically that everyone moves to LA because like you feel like you're not doing enough stuff because you're there so often. At least that's what some of these guys are like. You want to keep writing new jokes because you don't want people to see you doing the same stuff, but you still want to work on what you have. And so there's this thing of like you need to be able to go somewhere new to like kind of grow.
For sure. I mean, every path is different, I suppose. You know, things just end up pulling you out there. Mm. You know, I always said I'll go to LA when they come and get me and not a minute before. And that's what happened. But man, it really is so great to be there. And it's so comfortable. It's just like, oh man, you get so good so fast. This is...
Yeah.
Oh, it's such a treat.
And it's arguably better than it ever was, right? I mean...
Yeah.
I mean, I never had all these rooms going.
Well, yeah. I mean, no. It is, you know, it's the amount of people that know that name from all the documentaries, Louis Show, SNL, a bunch of people did specials there. I mean, it's, you know, the very famous Come to Papa Live that started the Village Underground, by the way. First show ever at the Village Underground.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, it was my creation. I should be getting a commission. it's world-renowned, so it's like, ticket-wise, yes. But, if I may, the period when it was... like right around 2003, 2000 to 2005, maybe, when you would walk in there and it would be Seinfeld, Colin Quinn, Patrice O'Neill, Jim Norton, Nick DiPaolo, Greg Giraldo, myself. I mean, that was a killer era of just
beasts. That's when I was here for you know, I was going to grad school at NYU, and that's what I would go to. I would go to the Cellar because that was the cheapest hamburger.
Right.
And, you know, I was so, I was doing the Boston Comedy Club. I wasn't doing the Cellar.
Right.
And that's when Seinfeld was doing the comedian movie.
Right.
So, like, you were there. Your wife was there.
Yeah.
That was, like, 2099, like, yeah. around that. So
it was a killer time. I mean, the caliber of comedian was, you couldn't get a, you wouldn't catch a breath. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, everybody was just a killer. And, you know, you can't help but when it's your era, I think it's the best for sure. I'm sure at some point Mark Norman is going to look back and be like, remember when it was me and Joe List? And
well, they talk about like the creek and the cave or something. And I was like, yeah. I don't know about that.
Yeah. Everybody's got their thing they got to carve out. But I mean, it's still just great. I mean, any place where you can be doing your spots and have like these killers walk in, you just be totally on top of your game. But really, what a nice little... what a nice little treat. But the only problem with being in New York is I didn't get to one Yankee game. I was going to go yesterday and it was pouring all day, and then they ended up getting the game in.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I could have gone last night, but...
That's the problem with Thursday is the day game that I'm supposed to go to, but it's supposed to rain, so...
You forget that it rains places.
Yeah, it sucks.
I know. And the problem is when I come on trips like this, I can't pack everything.
Yeah.
I can't pack sweaters and a suit and a... raincoat and jeans and workout clothes. You just gotta play the odds. So yeah, I left like all my rain gear at home.
I was just telling you, like, I was wearing a jacket and it felt like nice enough, but then you're in a subway and you don't want to just be sitting on a subway thing with your shirt on too. So it's like,
there was a guy on the subway yesterday that smelled so bad. Not a homeless guy. He had a backpack. He was carrying some big thing. He was sweating. He was talking to some other guy that he recognized. Didn't seem like a homeless situation. But when I tell you, I was reading a book. I was just looking down, reading a book. And the smell went into my nose and took the front lobe of my brain behind my eyes and twisted it and filled it with lemon juice. Oh, my God. I was like, what the... It's like human feces and burning tires and goat's ass.
Yeah, that New York smell, especially the subway, there's... Oh. You hit a couple different pockets on the way down where it's like, what was that?
Yeah. Man, oh man. And it's as it's heating up, it's definitely going to become a little smellier. So nice to be here, though. God, it's just so... I mean, you walk down the street. You can't eat. Just in the walk from here to the Comedy Cellar, there's, I think, 2 trillion places to eat.
Yeah.
It's just insane. And I've been rereading Jim Harrison. You know, the guy I always talk about, the big from Michigan who just passed away a little while ago. He writes... I picked up a book of his that is... it's called, like, The Long Lunch or something. And Mario Batali wrote the foreword for it.
Oh, okay.
And it's all about his love of food. He wrote a series of articles for Esquire about his love of wine, his love of food, his love of hunting, his love of all this stuff. You know, he's just a beast. He devoured everything in his path and became friends with Mario Batali because he just loved to eat so much, and Mario would just feed him, and he would be so over the... He was like a marriage made in heaven. So I've been reading it and just getting crazy in my head. I just, like, I got to eat.
Yeah.
I've got to eat something. So last night I snuck into Lupa, which is Mario's place.
Oh, okay.
Oh, my God.
I don't think I've ever been to any of his places. How many does he have now?
I don't know in total, because he always has, like, part ownership of some things. But
yeah.
Lupa on Thompson... Oto on 8th Street, which is more like a pizza kind of place. Lupa's okay. Like the straight fare. The Babo's, which is a little fancier place on Washington Square Park. And then Del Posto, which is over on the east side. The west side. In like the around 14th Street. That place was an old bank and now it's like this big palatial restaurant. And very pricey, but very... elegant,
yeah,
and crazy. You know, he sometimes just goes like nuts with his menu and is like, we're going with bull's cheeks and pig snouts and the craziest wine you've ever had. So I went into there and I was like, I'm going to eat like Jim Harrison. And I'm looking at the menu and it's like, if I did eat like Jim Harrison, I would be eating the rabbit. There was rabbit. I'd be eating rabbit. I'd have a couple quails. I'd have a couple more bottles of wine. I couldn't keep up the pace.
Yeah, which you got to know that one of those things is going to make you sick.
It's going to make you, or it's just going to make you have the sweats in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
It really gets to a point, like if you do a show and then you go out to eat it, like that, you should eat that probably around 5 in the afternoon. To be starting that meal at 9:30, you're basically guaranteeing you're not going to sleep because you're going to have your gut just filled with spaghetti carbonara. Then I had octopus.
Oh, jeez.
I had big octopus suction cups. Oh, so good.
It was good?
Oh, my God. Yes. And I really felt like I calmed down. I just couldn't. I was just like, I wanted to eat that way the whole time, but I was doing so many spots, and it just never was working out. And I was walking through the streets like reading his books about wine and food, and it's all around me. And I'm like, why am I eating a tuna sandwich at the Broome Street Bar? I gotta eat like Harrison. And last night was the night. Oh, it was good.
Went all out?
All out, but you know, I probably could have gone a little crazier.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So octopus,
pasta,
and quail
cheese,
eggs.
Salamis. I should have thrown a couple quails in there.
What did you have for dessert?
I had this olive oil cake and some more cheese.
That's not dessert. It's cheese.
Cheese is dessert. They don't even offer it on the menu except for the dessert.
No, but his thing, isn't he making some kind of a fluffy pastry thing? Or I thought he did all those Italian desserts.
Yeah, he had the olive oil cake, which was delicious. But then part of the dessert menu is a list of about 30 cheeses.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. No, at the end of the meal, I would much rather have the cheese than something sweet.
Oh, not me. No way. I need something light. Like, even those super thick chocolate things are, like, too much. I need something, like, light.
Like what? What's your perfect dessert at the end of a big Italian meal?
I like creme brulee. It's pretty good.
That's a good one.
Or some kind of, like, light, like a cream pie or, like, a ice cream thing. Something
nice.
Because even if it's a really good chocolate, like, you know, you go to, like, the Cheesecake Factory, and they have those 5-pound slices of whatever. Yeah. I'm like, I can't eat this. This isn't something.
I don't have that sweet tooth, really. And when I those desserts, like, I'll do it just because it's festive, and I'm usually drunk by the time dessert's coming around. But I had a cannoli with Jerry after we went to this great pizza place, and I had a cannoli after that, and that was. A cannoli is probably the perfect one for me. It's a little creamy. It's a little sweet. It's not too over the top. But if I – and, you know, there's some ricotta cheese in the filling of a cannoli.
Oh, yeah?
So, yeah. So even there, I'm in cheese land. But if I could just have a different glass of wine and some cheese at the end of the meal, I'm so much happier. When I have that sugar, it just feels like a dump. I feel I just feel like all of a sudden my blood sugar's gone in another – The end of an Italian meal is insanity because you have some kind of liqueur, some kind of like port wine or something like that, a big sugar bomb and a cannoli or your tiramisu or whatever, your profiteroles, then an espresso to jack you up the other way. You're going up and down and sideways. You're just a mess. You're like a pinball heart attack.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of that thing. There is Tartufo. You ever heard of that?
Yeah.
That's really good. Like,
that's good.
They have all these kind of ones that they just invent. And it's
what about the profiteroles? You ever have those? Those little like those little dough ball, kind of like pastry balls dipped in chocolate with a little ice cream in
those the are good, but I don't like it when it's too bready. Like that stuff that we got at that tartine.
Right.
Like that thing that had the cream and the chocolate in it.
Oh,
that was like the lightest, flakiest one. If it's too much, like a cannoli is almost too much bread. Like I'm not a big donut person either. Like,
No, I get that. But I'm telling you, I just asked the girl, like, what cheese, what's your favorite? And she's like, this one is kind of strong. And it's kind of my favorite. And then she brought it out and brought a little sourdough bread with it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Spread it on there. Oh.
So I know your dream dish now.
Cheese and sourdough.
Charcuterie.
Yeah, that's not so bad. That could be a whole meal. That could be the whole thing.
Yeah, I went to one in Montreal, And it was like, they have all the cheeses are always good.
Right.
And then all the kind of breads and crackers they give you. And then they'll have like these three meats, and always one of them is just like some kind of dare. Like, it's just like, it'll be some like salami that's like the fattiest fat that you've ever seen. And it's like, oh, that's from a goat or something. Or,
that's the goat's insides.
So you get like salami or what's prosciutto?
Yeah, prosciutto.
And
speck.
Then, what's that?
Speck. They're all like slight variations of salami sausage kind of things.
Oh, okay.
Also good.
Or I got, you know what I ate up there was, I think it was...
Up where?
Duck in Montreal. It was like spicy duck sausage.
What?
I think.
Duck sausage. Ooh. That doesn't sound like something you would ever eat.
I know. It was something like, I'll try it, and then it was actually good.
Yeah, well, that's what you get. You got to be bold, Paul. You got to get out there.
But you can't be. Every book and every person I've talked to that's traveled, the reason they get sick is because of the food.
Well, of course, but you got to eat something. I mean, you know.
But it's always the thing that, like, oh, I didn't know that, you know, a scorpion was going to make me sick.
Well, yeah, there's a limit. I know what you're saying. I mean, you don't have to eat Bourdain style off a food truck under a bridge somewhere.
Yeah.
You don't need to get that shot.
He's like daring
cool.
It. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, he's got something to show you.
That's what everybody who travels that much always gets violently ill at some point.
Yeah.
It's always a food based thing.
I know.
Like, but, oh yeah, we didn't cook that.
Well, all it is, it doesn't matter where you are. It's just a matter of someone with duty hands making you dinner.
Yeah. Well, most places you can't even drink the water without getting sick. So it's like
you just stay home with your white bread and peanut butter and jelly.
Well, you gotta build up your acidophilus, right? Doesn't you have to get that stomach, your stomach stuff, so it fights all the.
I think I saw the acidophilus in Rome.
Yeah.
We spent a whole day walking around the acidophilus. It was really cool. They were restoring the whole back part, so we couldn't get over there. But the acidophilus was amazing. I was watching a little of Aziz Ansari's Master of None,
yeah,
season 2,
mm-hmm,
which I didn't realize I never finished season 1.
Yeah, me neither.
But I was like 3 away. So I thought I was watching the beginning of the next season, but I was watching the old one. So then I just skipped ahead. This next one, which he really did, apparently he went to Italy and made pasta for a little while and tried to learn Italian.
Oh, yeah, I told you about it, that I liked it.
You did?
The episode. But yeah. I didn't know he actually did it.
Yeah, apparently he really did it.
Oh, that's great.
It was, yeah. And it was shot so cool. It really was. Like,
yeah, black and white.
It really made you want to. The first two... you know, and then it starts getting into relationship stuff, which I don't know if I'm going to hang in there that long. But it's a very well done. And him and Tim Heidecker,
Eric, yeah,
is they're great. You know, everyone's great. The whole thing's well done. But man, just watching them in Italy, I really was like, I can go back to Italy, you know, maybe in a couple years. And then after watching that, they did such a good job of capturing just the pace and the beauty and the, I mean, it was shot so well.
Yeah.
I literally was like, maybe I can get there by November.
Yeah, yeah. And it was cool. They got that kid.
That kid was hilarious.
Young kid who's just, I don't even know if he's an actor. I think it's just like a young kid who actually speaks Italian. That's all they
so
needed.
A little chubby Italian kid just yelling at Aziz.
He's
what
like,
are you doing? Yeah, no, no, no. What are you doing?
Ah! Stupid. Oh.
Stupid. Get my telephone.
Yeah, that
so
was
great.
Cool.
Really, really well done. Really made me want to go. God.
Yeah, the the one I was thinking about you, I watched on the plane, was the history of the VW bug.
That's so funny you were just saying that. I was literally standing outside the hotel looking for a picture of my VW bug to show the guy's a car guy.
Oh, yeah?
Who works the door. And I literally couldn't find one picture of my dumb bug.
Not a bug. I'm sorry. The bus.
Oh, the microbus?
It was of the bus in the first one. So
wait, what are you saying?
I know the difference now.
Between what?
There's the VW, basically the VW bus, the original one.
Right.
Is that's like from the 50s.
But came after the bug. The VW bug was first, because that was started around Hitler's time.
Right.
Hitler, I think, called it the people's car.
Yeah.
We try not to focus on that part.
Well, they did do the history of that guy, too. It was pretty interesting.
Of Hitler?
The guy who took it over.
It would be weird if you called Hitler that guy. Yeah, that guy. They talked about him.
Yeah, you remember him. He did a few things.
Oh, Hitler, right.
After the war,
right.
The guy who took it over, and they decide, like, we're going to rebuild the plant.
Uh-huh.
And so they modified, basically they got the engine and they modified it into like basically a flatbed so they could carry stuff back and forth. And the guy was like, we need to make that into something. And he drew a picture of the bus, and that's still framed. It's like a famous drawing that he did it. And that's what the hippie bus turned into. And basically that whole thing, like that car, I guess, was made to last forever. Like, people just talk about, there's some book that a guy wrote in the 50s that you can fix anything that's ever wrong with yours. Like, the only thing is, like, if it actually disintegrates or rusts, that's the only thing they have to repair. But other than that, like, it'll keep running no matter what. Yeah.
You know, I always, when I was in high school, I wanted a bus really, really badly. And, you know, I gathered up my money and I got a Toyota Corolla because my uncle was into cars and new cars, and he was all things cars, and told me that he had a Toyota Corolla, and I went down and got it from him. And as he said, it was a beautiful baby shit orange. But I always wanted that bus, always.
Yeah.
My friend Mike had one in Denver. And he lived up like towards Estes National Park, and we would take it and go up the mountains, and you literally had to just go on the shoulder because everybody, bicycles were passing you, hikers were passing you. But a great, great car, and I always wanted it, and Mike was a bit of a hippie as well. So fast forward, my daughter is going to be driving in a year or so.
Right.
And what does she desperately want? The bus.
Oh, yeah?
She desperately wants the bus. Every time we see the bus, she yells that that's her car. Wants the bus so badly. They've souped up a lot of the buses and put Porsche engines in them.
Well, here's the thing. It's
a death trap.
No. They made a lot of cases for it. You should watch this show with her then. Because it definitely, there's people that get the bus and they don't realize what they're taking on. And it's like, and there was even a guy, like a super hippie musician guy, it just had a menu. He's like, if you're going to tell me about your bus, give me $5. If you're going to tell me about the last time you drove yours, like, it's a thing that connects people, like, just like you were saying about your bug. Like, everybody has a story. If they ever had one, they feel like this connection to
you. They want to tell you. I was in high school and we had that car.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the best. I mean, you feel it. When I take the Volkswagen out, I feel like I'm in a parade.
Right.
Because everybody's waving.
They're all watching it, yeah.
But here's the thing. There's one lap belt that goes around your waist.
Oh, I see.
It's all metal. There's no, you know, a friend of mine's kid is driving, and I said, are you going to get her something safe? And he said, every new car is safe. And he's right.
Yeah.
Every new car has tons of warnings. They're built in that way. They've got airbags. There are some that are crazy safe, but even like the shitty cars are pretty safe.
Yeah.
The Volkswagens, it's just metal.
Right.
It's just metal. The first time I did the Tonight Show, Jay Leno leaned over and said to me, I don't know how, it must have come up in the green room that I had a Volkswagen bug.
Mm-hmm.
And I did the set and I sat down next to Jay and we went to commercial and he leaned over and said, right as we were coming back from commercial, he said, you know, you don't even want a seatbelt in the VW bug because it's got a big gas tank right in front of you. You just burst into flames. Okay, we're back. So I'm a little worried about it. And I was hit in the Volkswagen. I was going down Whitsitt and it was this beautiful day. Everything was going great in my life. And as the universe does, they sent a 72-year-old man around all the parked cars on the right of me, all cars that were stopped at the traffic light. This guy sped so fast, he went around all of the people that were stopped for the light and went through the light and tagged my car.
Jesus.
And hit like the top, the front, like the front passenger quarter, like up by the tire. And when my friend saw it, he says, you know, if he had just like a split second later, he's going through that door.
Yeah.
The passenger door, and he's in your lap. He's like, you're really lucky.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Ever since then, I've had the Volkswagen. I got it restored. I got it all back to shape. I've taken it out, I don't know, maybe 6 times. Like,
oh, really?
I almost look at it a little bit like a motorcycle.
Yeah.
Like.
But does it? What does the metal do, though? I thought the metal would be almost safer. It's just you're worried about the airbags and seat belts and stuff.
I don't know. I mean, you know, it's just I'd have to really do some research, but I suspect that it is not a car I'd want to put my daughter in.
Yeah, you know what's funny is when was the last time they made it? Well, they make the new
one. Well, they
one
made
now.
The Westfalias and all that. I think in like the 70s.
So, when I went to Mexico, I was there for a month for this class and I stayed with a family.
Mm-hmm.
And so they never stopped making Volkswagens there.
Right.
So this kid had one, and it's super crazy bare bones, like
right.
The gas meter and a speedometer. That's
right.
It. Like, it's literally nothing.
Yeah.
And he called it the Super Beetle, and he, you know, he was always, like, painting it or shining it or something like that, and you could tell it was, like, an intense thing of pride because they knew how to fix anything that went wrong with it, he could fix it. So
well,
he was just going to keep it forever.
Yeah, and you know there's a bit of a racket that you steal them from Southern California, and send them to Mexico.
Oh, really?
There's a big market for them there. Yeah.
Oh.
So when I do take that thing out, like I never leave it. And mine looks like a little like a hot rod. It looks like a Hot Wheel.
Yeah, yeah.
It's very bright and shiny, and has like racing like wheels on it. It's a bit over the top, and but I can't leave it and like walk into the mall and think that when I come out, it's still going to be there.
Yeah,
they're easy to steal.
Well, and the thing about the bus was, so basically that was the first van. Like, it holds 9 people.
Yeah.
There's a pop top, and this is
the
like
coolest. A little stove in there.
Everything. And you know, the shitty thing was, like, it only goes 50 miles an hour.
Yeah.
And that's what the guy said. It's, like, kind of the thing that time forgot because all the speed limits are 70 now, and
yeah.
It doesn't even go that. He goes, so then what I have to do is I have to take all these side roads, and I see all these things that I never would have seen.
Sure.
And he actually made a positive spin on it not being able to go fast. So I
love
like,
that.
Man, that's cool.
Yeah, like for us, I think as an adult, I think that's amazing. I think for anybody at any age, that's a great selling point. But I've taken my Volkswagen to the ice house, so I'm going on the 101 to the 134 to the ice house. And, you know, at night, people are hauling on there.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're in a Volkswagen and you're hitting 65, you feel like, I mean,
it's
you want to stop kids from using their cell phone, put them in one of those.
Yeah.
You are gripped onto the wheel. You are focused. You are holding that thing onto the road. I mean, there's no way you could even think about getting your cell phone out of your pocket.
Yeah.
You can't even think about calling somebody. There's too much going on. But, you know, every time you see, like, you know, Charles Bukowski used to drive around in a beat-up bug, and I'll see these bugs the same year as mine driving around, and it's their everyday car. It's a little beaten up. It's, you know, it's a little dirty, whatever, but it just goes. I mean, it's 2017, and this car is still just – it technically cannot be stopped.
Yeah. They were trying to speak to me, though, on there because the guy was, like, doing all these things about how cool it was and – everyone always looks at it. He's like, he goes, and you don't have people stop and ask you about a PT Cruiser, do you?
Yeah.
And I was like, oh,
okay, what's he got to slam your car for?
Mine's almost a classic now.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. There's also a thing with my car where, because I don't use it so often, and it'll stall when I come to a stop.
Mm-hmm.
And you stall when you come to a stop. So when you're coming, if you don't want to stall, when you're putting on the brake, you got to hit the gas a little bit. So you hit the clutch and the gas and the brake, take it out of gear, hit it, this is a lot of activity when you're just trying to stop at a stop sign. And between that tap dancing and trying not to get hit in, in the bug, it's, I, you know.
Everybody's got to have a system. You got to.
I know. And, you know, I think legally I can throw the kids in the back. There's no seatbelts in the back at all. Mm. They didn't come with seatbelts in the back. Jeez. And the front just has a lap belt like on a swing set. My buddy has one, and he got regular seatbelts put into it.
Yeah.
Maybe that's the move. Maybe I should get it.
I would think so. I think that's because people would rather get the seatbelts put in than sell the car. Like, it sounds like the people...
Yeah, and it's not like, you know, after it's been hit, it's not like it's this pure cherry thing. I mean, the miles are so super low on it. It is a pretty hot item, but... Yeah. So what? If I, you know, who gives a shit? Like, I should throw belts in and live to feel bad about it not being perfect. You know what I mean? Then be like, no, it's perfect, and go flying through the windshield.
Yeah, it's... Well, they were talking about, so that original bus, I don't know how long they made it for, but the only other thing they made was a Synchro,
right?
Which was a four-wheel drive, I think.
What's it called?
It's called a VW Bus Synchro.
Ooh.
And they actually have Tom Hanks talking about it on Letterman, how he just got one, and they're so rare, and it was like the only VW bus that had like four-wheel drive. And then that's the last one they ever made. And now they actually make them again, but they're basically like a minivan. Like, the engine's in front, and it just isn't the same. So they're kind of like bagging on how...
What about the thing? Did they mention the thing? There was a VW thing.
Oh, no. I've heard of that, though. What's the difference? What was...
That was almost like an... It almost looked like a little bit of an Army Jeep Volkswagen.
Oh, okay.
It was this crazy little... And they literally called it the thing.
No, this was like specifically about just the bus, and but it made it seem like it was like a Volkswagen thing. Like, I mean, it almost seems like if you had one, it would alter where your life would go. You know what I mean? Like, if you got one when you're 18, it's like, all right, I guess I'm joining a band now.
That's
funny. You know, you can't go work at Wall Street when you get a VW bus when you're 17.
No, and a big bag of weed.
You become a walking party.
And, you know, it's a shame because my daughter really loves them. And, you know, a couple of years ago, not only would it be a fun car, it would be a relatively cheap car.
Yeah.
Now, they're really expensive.
Oh, to just
the market
one?
For buses has really gone through the roof. Yeah, they're really expensive now because people are taking them and putting these weird engines in them, and they become a little thing. I mean, the whole car market has gotten crazy, and the buses are no exception. They're pricey.
Yeah.
So she's gonna get a Ford Focus, and she could tape a picture of a bus in the
what about
dashboard.
The updated. Bug that they made like what 5 years ago, 10 years
yeah,
ago.
Yeah, my neighbor has one.
That's cool.
Young girl has it, and they're fun. Those look pretty cool.
Yeah,
why not? That's a good idea. Let's sell her on that.
I think that's probably the same price as a Focus now.
Yeah, it can't be that expensive, right? I think she would do well in that
because I think they did stop making them, right? I feel like I haven't seen those.
What the bug? The new bugs?
The updated bug.
I don't know if they stopped, did they?
I feel like that was like that. Remember when they made a Thunderbird for like a year or two?
Right.
I feel like it was around that time, yeah.
That was a big
I actually liked that one because it looked so different.
Yeah.
It kind of looked old-fashioned.
I know.
Had a hard top convertible.
Once Katie Couric was riding around in it, it kind of killed it for all the macho guys.
You know what's funny is I had a... Do you remember the Comet? There's a Mercury Comet.
Yes.
And there was also another brand. It was the same car, basically, but it just looked like this weird kind of... I had a booger green. It was a Mercury Comet.
Nice.
And I just read this book. Tom Davis, the guy who was in the comedy team with Al Franken.
Mm-hmm.
So he was friends with Jerry Garcia, and he just had this like beat up Mercury Comet in L.A. that he just drove around.
Yeah.
And he just happened to, like, Jerry was like, hey, I need a ride. So he drove Jerry Garcia, like, through Santa Monica Boulevard in this old Comet. and just stopped at a liquor store and runs in. He comes out and there's this guy talking to Jerry. He's like, "But you really look like him, man." He's like, "Nah, I get that all the time." He's like, so like this guy actually met Jerry Garcia and didn't know it because he's in this shitty car.
That's hilarious.
There was an awful attack last night at the Ariana Grande concert over there in the Great Britain, which is such a shame for so many. I mean, it's so they're such cowards, and you know, all young girls. And, you know, I've got girls, and they're Ariana Grande fans to some degree. And we've watched that little kid when she was on Disney Channel doing her thing. And then, you know, she's been around a long time and just, like, you know, doing her thing. And then you go blow up, you know, I don't know, how many people are dead now? Like 20 people are dead.
Yeah, and a lot of people injured.
A lot of people injured. For the first time, I agreed with something that Trump's doing.
Oh, what's that?
He says that he's not calling them terrorists anymore. He's calling them losers. But, you know, he was so effective with shitting on people and giving them nicknames and making them feel bad about themselves. I could see just him calling. We have another loser out there. Another loser did this. I really could see it being effective. I really think that's not a bad move. It might be the best thing he's ever done.
It's not a very... That's not a very charged word, though.
It's kind of good.
Like that's the... Norm MacDonald always does that thing. He talks about, like, the serial killer would cut up the bodies, put them in the refrigerator. I mean, this guy was a real jerk.
Yeah.
That's what it feels like when you call a terrorist loser. A loser.
He's a loser.
That guy, he's not gonna have friends after this.
I don't know. I mean, why not call them what they are? You're just a loser. 22-year-old loser. I mean, it goes back to my old joke of like, what are you doing at 22? Like, 22 years old.
Yeah.
You should be hanging out outside the Ariana Grande concert and just getting phone numbers.
Yeah.
You're 22. Just get a girl and relax. You know, what do you, you know, I mean, that's like, you can't explain rationale to psychotic people who've been raised by other psychotic people.
Did they find out how old the guy was?
Is that 22. What
it was? Yeah, that's... I mean, it almost made you think, like, nobody else would think that this is a big deal except for somebody who's 20 years old. Yeah. Isn't that funny?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Right, exactly.
It's like, yeah, if you
they're not
somebody...
going, they're not going to the Journey concert.
Yeah, it's like, well, the Journey
safest,
guy,
the safest show you can go to is Steely Dan and the Allman Brothers.
Well, it does show, wasn't the Eagles of Death Metal guy was like their age? Like, it almost shows you how old the guy is by the event he chose to bomb.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no one's going to the Tony Bennett concert. If he had a suicide vest, he'd just fall over on his way, and he'd be like, I can't.
He's make got
it.
A grenade from World
years
War II.
Old. So ridiculous. What a douche. But I have to say, when I heard Trump say, that's it, I'm not calling them terrorists anymore, I'm calling them losers, I was like, you know what? This is just dumb enough to work. This is really good to it. I saw a great... I got to go to the premiere of a great movie that's coming out on HBO.
Mm-hmm.
Right before I left for this trip, I went to a screening of the premiere at... what was it? The Samuel Goldwyn Theater in L.A. It's always cool to go to those cool little screenings in those beautiful... Oscar-worthy theaters and stuff.
Yeah.
Produced by George Shapiro, Jerry's Seinfeld's manager.
Okay.
And with Carl Reiner and Amy Hyatt. And it's called If You're Not in the Obits, If You're Not in the Obits, Eat Breakfast.
Right.
And it's about all people that are over 90 who are still living very active lives.
Yeah.
They show Carl Reiner and it's a great movie. They have like some famous people, and then they also have some regular folk who are just all over 90 and still running around and killing it. It was really, really impressive. I mean, these people are just, you know, they're jogging. They're everybody has something that they really want to do. Mm-hmm. And you wake up in the morning and feel like you've got to go someplace. People are counting on you.
Right.
That's a huge part of it. Another part is to have real passion about what you're doing. You know, like you have to have real love of whatever it is, painting, writing. Carl Reiner is on his sixth book, I think.
Yeah. That's
since he's been 90. Six books since 90.
That's crazy.
It is crazy. But what's cool is like he just gets up in the morning and goes to his computer. Like he knows, mm-hmm. like he gets his coffee and goes to the computer and he knows he wakes up with a purpose, you know?
Yeah.
It's a huge thing. You know, all these times when we talk about this all the time, but the idea that like you can retire and just that's it. I'm not doing anything but sitting in my house, you know. And that's it.
Like, yeah.
The dream is to not do anything. It's that'll kill you.
Well, that's what you know, when I was talking to the documentary people, it was just about like how, you know, I think I told you I did like some show in like a retreat campground in Seattle,
mm-hmm.
like Saturday night, and drove 2 hours at like 3 a.m. to get to the airport to fly back to
right.
do a show. And it was just like, even I, as I'm doing it, it's like, I can't do this forever.
Right.
So it's like, it's like I got to do this in small doses. But then when I come home after that, it feels like I need to relax.
Right.
I can't just keep working like crazy. But that's what I feel like doing now because there are so many other things I want to do. So I know that one of these two things is going to suffer. And
right.
I kind of have to figure out, you know, which, you know... You can only get so much done when you're at a retreat in Seattle. It's cool to have that story.
Yeah.
And to do that show and make those people happy. But at the end of the day, that's not the end game. Isn't, isn't the campground draw.
No. You know, I always remember in the Ray Charles movie, like when he like really got his act together and was going to make like his comeback and was going to, you know, he was treating himself like a national treasure, you know, and was renegotiating everything. He was going to get the ownership of his recordings. That was important. A couple other items. And the other one was a plane to take him to all of his gigs. Because he knew that traveling the hard way would limit your life. You wouldn't be able to go that long traveling that way. And I always think about that when I end up in a coach seat.
Right.
In the middle. It's like, this could kill you. If you had to do this all the time, and if you don't have the means for a private jet, maybe you shouldn't be traveling that far.
Right.
After
right.
a certain age. I mean, we're still young and can do it, but at a certain point, you can't.
Well, that's the thing. Even like, you know, even so this week, to be able to make this trip make sense, I'm staying in Newark instead of New York City, where the hotels are like $300 or $400
right.
a night. For this week, for whatever reason. So you've got to figure out, like, all right, well, I have to take a train in.
What are you paying in Newark?
What's that?
What are you paying in Newark?
I think it's $88.
$88?
Yeah.
Is it safe?
Yeah, it's a Ramada.
Really?
Yeah, right by the airport.
Really?
So I just take that train all the way in to Madison Square Garden there.
So you got
to
take that home tonight.
Yeah. So that's the thing is, like, do you rent a car? And you're, you know, driving that and paying the, so you've got to figure out. So I've done this so many times that like now I'm trying to figure it out. But obviously, you know, when you do a TV show or something like Colbert, you're trying to like have this. So I'm just walking places. And
no. Yeah. You got to. Yeah. And then this is kind of like a screw around week. You can just have fun. You do the show tonight. We do this now. And then it's like, who cares if you're burning energy traveling around?
Well, that's what I mean. It's like these 2 days of. You know, I did Sirius today, doing this, then the show, and then Sirius tomorrow morning, and then I'm done. So it's like you have these small pouches, but then it's like you go back to L.A. and you feel like, oh, I got to relax. It was like, no, you can't relax. You got to keep working.
Yeah, you
got to
do your other stuff. I know. Well, I'll tell you, there was one lady. She was she ran. She lost her 2 sons, and she's now a runner. She just runs like crazy. Her running, you know, you falling down looks like her running. But she does it every day. And another one does yoga. She teaches yoga.
Yeah.
And does ballroom dancing.
Uh-huh.
Carl Reiner does his writing. Dick Van Dyke still runs around dancing. His thing is keep moving. Keep moving. Yeah. Dance around, move around. And also he married a girl who's like 40. He's right. 90. And he's got this...
That is a big thing that those older guys say. Like Quincy Jones always had like a 30-year-old girlfriend or something.
Yeah.
He's like 80-something now.
Yeah. I guess if you in your mind could get over the fact that your breath is probably killing her. If you don't care about that, then you're probably all right. But yeah.
Well,
it takes a special girl to... I mean, she's like, I love him. I really love him. And, you know, it didn't matter the age. It was weird at first. And it was like, had to wrap my head around it. But we just literally fell in love. And but, you know, you still got to get naked and walk around the bed at some point. You got to really love somebody.
Yeah. Well,
at that point.
Well, I'd like to see that movie because it is like, well, this guy who just passed away was a buddy of mine. He's 52. Was one of the original Conan writers.
Wow.
Was a head writer on Conan when he was like 27.
Jeez.
Just Shoot Me, did Last Man Standing, Fuller House. Funny guy, like an expert in the Beatles. Was a
Who
big,
is this?
Marsh McCall is the guy's name.
Marsh McCall.
Just died in his sleep, 52.
No.
And
was
just,
he eating quails and rabbits?
No, I played basketball with him. That was one of my jokes was I played basketball with his group of guys on like Saturday morning. And I said, that's when you know you lost street cred in basketball when you're playing against a guy in a Just Shoot Me warm-up suit. But like, couldn't be a nicer guy. Loved music. Like played in one of those goofy like writers bands and stuff, and was an expert in the Beatles. Anytime I had a Beatles question, I was always ask him. And
he was in shape.
Yeah, yeah, active, always working.
Jeez.
And daughter, and really? Yeah, just
heart attack.
They don't know. I just saw it in Deadline, and then everyone was posting like these. I mean, it's one of those guys.
Terrible.
Like nobody has a bad thing to ever say about him. You know, like every show he ever worked on, people like him. So that's what makes you think. Like he, as far as I know, he did everything he wanted to do. Like he was doing exactly what he wanted, and
that's
part
great.
Of you makes it. Well, that's okay then. You know.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's not. I mean, his loved ones that left behind are gonna be hurting, but. No, you got to do everything because you're right. I mean, you might be 90, you might be 50. Who the hell knows? That's why you got it. I should have eaten two quails last night. I should have had the quails and the rabbit.
Well, that's what I mean. Is like, do you feel like were any of those people in the movie? Did they? Because that's what they say about Mickey Mantle. You know, like everybody in his family died like in their 30s.
Yeah.
So he never felt like he was going to get past 40, and that's why he lived so recklessly.
Yeah.
And then when he made it to 60. And he was just breaking down. He had to, like, I think he did get sober at least for a few years at the end, right?
Yeah, but you know, probably a little too late.
Yeah. So it's like, what are those guys? I don't think Mel Brooks was ever a guy that was, like, lived too fast. You know what I mean? Like,
No, they weren't right. No, they were, they worked, you know?
Yeah.
They weren't big boozers. They weren't big druggies or, no. Yeah, not one of them was like, yeah, I really partied hard.
Yeah.
You know?
Or like a crazy smoker. Like, I'm sure all those guys smoked at least for a stretch. But
yeah, I remember Mel Brooks smoked for a long time.
Oh, he did?
Yeah, he used to be on Dick Cavett smoking cigarettes. Look up on YouTube. It's the greatest. Watching him young. And anyway, at the end of the movie, there was a panel with Dick Van Dyke, Mel Brooks, Carl Reiner, what's his name? Norman Lear.
Oh, okay.
And they're all telling stories and hanging out, and they were all friends, like, coming up. And I didn't know Norman Lear and Carl Reiner and Mel Brooks, like, all hung out as, like, when they were young.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and just really cool. And they were all up on stage, and everybody was, like, you know, a little, like, older guy, like, talking. But Mel Brooks was just, like, standing up and telling stories, and he was laughing and just abusing everybody, and he was like, he seemed like he was like 50, 60 years old.
Yeah.
It was amazing.
His thing about, was it Hitchcock that he used to have lunches with? I think it was Mel Brooks.
Really?
And just talked about how much he would eat, and I guess he was like a secret fan of like one of those like Blazing Saddles or something,
right?
Silly early, and they worked on the same lot, and they would eat lunch together.
Wow.
And he would just have these stories about how much he would eat.
Yeah.
And yeah. he's like,
how
I can't
how
do
How old
it.
Was he when he died?
Yeah, right.
Right? I mean, yeah, he couldn't have lived very long.
No. Yeah, that's the thing. And Woody Allen, too, is the same thing. Like, I don't eat for pleasure at all. It's purely for sustenance and...
All right, so what's the way to go? Do you live like Jim Harrison and you have quails and bull's heads and five bottles of wine during the day and you check out at 70 whatever, living life to the fullest?
Yeah.
Or do you carefully shuffle along on the thin ice and hope it doesn't crack?
Well, that's
and make it an extra 20 years, an extra 15, 20 years. I mean, 15, 20 years is a long time in a life, right?
That's true.
It's a whole nother career, a whole nother life, a whole nother, you know, adult gap.
Mm-hmm.
Is it worth it
to not
have bread and butter?
I don't think it's a food thing. I think it's more of the substance stuff. Because all those guys, Hunter S. Thompson, even Hemingway, they lived way longer than they thought they would make it, right? That's why they ended up... like killing themselves, because it's like, I didn't think I was going to make it, and now I got a bad hip, and I can't travel, and, you know, I can't smoke my cigarettes anymore. I don't know. It's a tough...
I don't know. I mean, the thing, you know what it is? I really feel like, live your life, and, you know, you don't want to completely turn stuff down and not do things, but if it makes you feel crummy in the present day, that's the reason I don't... have four bottles of wine at lunch because I'm going to feel like death by 6 o'clock. I want to enjoy today also. You know what I mean? Two glasses of wine, that's really living it up. Do you have to go to four bottles? You know what I mean? It really doesn't take much. And you could have like a little taste of quail and then you don't have to have four quails.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, isn't that the thing they always say? Everything in moderation. That's what all the old people tell you.
It's the truth. Wow, look at this. Oh, no, that was his wife. Oh, hold on. Let me see. Dun, dun, dun. Dun, 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 dun.
I added another pill to my regimen now. Guess what the new one is?
Guess how old... First, you guess how old Alfred Hitchcock was when he died. That fat load.
I bet he made it 60.
Eating a ton. Eating like a monster. In the movie business, the stressful movie business.
53.
81.
What?
81.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So you know what?
Let's do it.
Quails all around.
Let's get dessert.
Let's go. I'm going crazy. We got to live a little. This is ridiculous. Walking around like Woody Allen, scared of the world. Not eating for pleasure. Screw off, Woody. I'm getting a goddamn cookie on the way to the show tonight.
It is...
We're getting nachos after, and I'm going to have the sweats. I'm going to have nacho sweats during the night.
Yeah, you have to look up this.
That is crazy. Hunter S. Thompson
had his daily routine, too.
Yeah.
This lady wrote it down, and it's basically like some kind of juice, some kind of liquor, a bunch of eggs, and just like cocaine, like every... 45 minutes. And it was like, it was just himself writing this down, you would think he's bragging, but this was like another person keeping track of what he did.
That's hilarious. Yeah, I don't know. I can't. Cocaine, that's.
Dunhill's? Isn't that like a cigarette that doesn't have filters on it or something?
Yeah, those are like the classy ones. They come in a nice case.
Yeah, that's what he smoked in that thing.
Really?
It would say like Dunhill's, orange juice, cocaine, and then...
And miserable. Like, how'd he end his life?
Well, he didn't get up till 3.
Didn't get up till 3.
Right.
Yeah. Then a shotgun to the head. Oh, boy. Well, I recommend you see it. That was Carl Reiner's saying, if you're not in the obit, eat your breakfast. You'd get the obituaries, take a look, and then if he was still alive, he would eat his breakfast.
Yeah, I feel like those guys take a lot of naps, too.
It was cool because I actually got to sit down for this Come to Papa when I would do all those interviews I sat in his office where he was writing the books, and they were filming a lot of the documentary.
Oh, cool.
It was the little couch where I got to sit and talk to him, which was really great. When I was there, he told me, which isn't in the movie, he said he just hopes for a bowel movement in the morning, and if he gets one, he just says to the sky, "All systems go." Well, we have a show in a little bit. We probably should get out of here.
Yeah. Well, that's the key, I think, too, is like they have something that they're doing. You don't get obsessed with what's that red mark on my forehead. You know what I mean? Like they're not sitting around waiting for something bad to happen.
No, and also at that point, you have so many red marks, you can't really. You know, now if you get like one little blemish, you're like, ooh, gross. But then when you have more of that than you do regular skin. Kim Frisch says on Twitter, "Tom Papa, I'm waiting for you to invite avid listeners, me, to be one-person audience to your podcast. Really just want to hang with Paul Morrissey."
And just have one person laughing uncomfortably.
We've talked about that. I kind of like that idea, the audience of one. The one-person audience is a good idea. It's a little weird that we record a lot of times at my house.
Yeah.
I could be asking for some trouble. But it's an idea that I'm not going to say no. I would keep it in play because I really like the idea of having one audience member.
Just one person?
Yeah, just one person. They just sit there. They don't get a mic. They just get to sit there and hang out and eat jelly beans.
We can just do that with the UPS guy every time at your house. Just yeah. Say, hey, why don't you come in?
Well,
for
people
a little
liked
while.
When Cynthia all of a sudden made an appearance.
Right, yeah.
You know, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. Everyone's very happy when Bella shows up.
It feels like Three's Company when somebody just miraculously shows up. Oh, yeah, your neighbor. Remember she came in and she's like, what are you guys doing?
Yeah,
like,
that's
hey,
right.
It's a podcast.
Eric Ellenbrook sent me a picture of his first sourdough bread. He said, this is from a starter I made from scratch. Not the best, but for my first time, I'll take it. And Eric, that is a great job. That is a good job. This thing was wrong with it. Sure. It looks a little odd, but that is a puffy loaf of tasty bread. And I'm going to say good job, my friend. And now welcome to the world of bread. I literally at this point, I've been on the road for almost a week. Of course I'm looking forward to seeing my wife and my children and my dog and the cat. But I'm also very excited to get back to my starter so I can start cranking out some loaves of bread. It's ridiculous.
Did anybody take care of
it? Makes me panicky knowing that they're at home with no bread.
You don't have a camera on the starter?
I should. And my family should really step it up. And if they were to feed them a little more, I would, if they could actually help me out, they could have bread tomorrow. But nobody wants to learn. I did the Bennington show yesterday. It's such a great show, isn't it?
Yeah, that was fun.
It's a really good radio show. So we got a lot of people talking on there about their two guys that were wearing their tank tops. I don't understand it. Two heavyset guys wearing tank tops, and they said it's for the sweat. I'm like, but it doesn't. It's way below the armpit.
Yeah.
I mean, how does that tank, you know, you're still gushing out of those big chubby pits of theirs. Like, why not a t-shirt?
Well, that's the thing about New York is, like, you're basically kind of out for the day. So you got to look, either go for looking presentable or being comfortable. And
yeah.
There's some guys that just, like, there was a fat guy on my plane that just had tank top and, like, sleeping pants. Basically looked like pajama bottoms and flip-flops. And he's like, you know what? Screw it.
when that guy's saying, you know what? Screw it. He's saying screw it to life.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean? Like, don't you have enough? Like, I was telling those guys, that's where this conversation started, that they travel on the plane and, like, in their pajamas and flip flops. And I'm like, guys, you know, you're young guys. You want to make a career for yourself. You want to do something. You get dressed up. You might run into somebody. You might, you know, run into someone who works at the Sirius that's going to give you a job. Or you might, both of them single, by the way.
Yeah.
It's like, you might meet a girl. You might meet a girl moving, going to the town that you're going to.
Yeah.
What, is she going to hook up with the guy taking his flip-flops off and laying there and scratching his nuts?
But that is the thing,
though. Put on a collared shirt and a belt.
When did you start doing that, though?
I never stopped.
No, but when you were in high school, were you saying, I got to look good for girls? Or this is comfortable, I'm wearing it?
I was thinking girls. Yeah, I was thinking girls. I looked comfortable. I wasn't walking around in jackets and ties. I was dressing my age, but good for my age. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was wearing T-shirts, but they weren't like scungy. And, you know, I had a little style going on, I guess, somewhat, with my mullet and my... I'd rock a Springsteen vest now and again. But
well, those are certain
but
things.
But I always was but also we grew up at a time where it would be odd to be dressed like that. Like if you went to the airport, you were obviously the kid. Mm-hmm. You were the kid, and if you were wearing your basketball pants, they were sweatpants, they weren't shorts.
Right.
And you know, your parents told you to put on some clothes to go, but still you were dressed like a kid. Now the problem is grown-ups are dressing like toddlers.
Yeah.
Not even like high school kids. They're dressing like toddlers. They're walking around like babies in their diapers.
Yeah.
I mean, it's completely ridiculous.
It was that joke. Remember, people always used to do the joke about the fat guys that wear the warm-up suits?
Yeah.
Like, they're the guys that never worked out or they're always the guys wearing it.
Yeah.
And, like, that was all comfort, don't you think? Like, the
for
guys
sure.
that were fat guys and they have this matching... you know, sweatsuit. It's like they're not working out. They're just they don't have pants that fit.
Yeah.
Or their belt isn't.
Look, I know I'm swimming against the tide here, but you know, at a certain point you just, you know, dress a little bit like your age. Dress a little bit different than your kids are dressing. You know? I don't know. That's what I love about walking around New York, by the way. There's actually grown-ups here. They're like people walking around in like suits and ties, and they look great, and women that are elegant, and you know, it's so friggin' hot where we live. It's like everyone's walking around in like their bathing suits because they're just living on the surface of the sun, the future of global warming that is L.A., California. I love that people are actually walking around like, you know, young men dressed like adults. It's so refreshing.
Yeah, that's but that was definitely a phase of like... Oh, I got to, like, when I would work at the TV station, I would wear shorts and whatever, but when I was in the air, I had to wear a suit.
Right.
And it never even occurred to me that I would wear the suit any place other than being on TV. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. Like, oh, I probably should have looked nice going everywhere.
You're younger, you know, but at a certain point, step up your game.
Yeah.
All right, we got to get out of here. We got to go do our big live show. We've gone long. And we got to get this thing uploaded for our friends. Everybody freaked out last week, by the way, because the podcast just cut off at the very end when we were talking about yoga and stuff. It just completely went blank. And I didn't want to just repost it because I was afraid it would knock out the other part of it. So I just left it off. It was we were very funny at the end. I remember that. But it's kind of the lost tape.
Okay.
Sorry, gang. It wasn't our fault, though. It was the SoundCloud part of it just didn't pick it up. Hopefully, this one will be complete, and we will talk to you on Thursday. Maybe. We'll figure it out. Enjoy your life.